Back at it with you, brand new week, brand new month on Connecticut Today, Monday, February 1st on WICC, on the radio and online at WICC600.com. Amid a pretty healthy snowstorm, Governor Ned Lamont delivered his latest coronavirus update to the state, and things are looking up a bit. 5 o'clock hour, we kick that off with reporter Brian Lockhart from Hearst Connecticut Media and the Connecticut Post, looking at everything going on in and around Greater Bridgeport. Also, I took some time to react to a sudden shift in tone, perhaps, from the White House regarding China. Folks, I'm telling you cannot script this any better. You can't. If I brought in my stable of writers right now around the table, I would say, script something for me by 6 o'clock tonight, get around, then do a table read, whatever, what you people do. Write something even more duplicitous than what's going on right now. They couldn't do it. What am I talking about? Did you hear what Tom Roberts said right there? Anthony Blinken, the new Secretary of State, saying, well, the biggest threat right now to America is China. Gee. No sugar, Sherlock. Now, remember when I'm just saying, I know he's not in office anymore, but I'm just saying, S-A-Y-I-N apostrophe. That's the hip way to say it now. I'm just saying, anytime the Trump White House mentioned China, they're about China. That's because they don't want to talk about Russia. They mentioned China. It's so xenophobic when you mention China. But now, I guess the floodgates are open, kids. I'm sorry. It is so... You can't script it any better. It's right out of central casting. Really? And how many times have you heard me over the past year and change, almost 2 years, and other people say, hey, wait a minute, why does one side always talk about Russia? And a lot of people say, hey, wait a minute, we know what the Russians are about. We've got their dirt baggery down since the mid-1940s with Stalin, for God's sake. But the real thing is China. No, you can't say, no, you're just being xenophobic. You're causing anti-Asian bias. And now, Tony Blinken, geez, these Chinese commies are pretty bad people. Well, gee, thank you. I'm telling you, the next 2 or 4 years is going to be great. It's Ted Mack amateur hour. That's old school, huh? All over again. You think? How many guests have we had on this show? And I've had over the years who say, you know what, China, Russia, yeah, two bad apples, but, you know, the ones that are really stretching their legs all over the world, hey, they're threatening Taiwan. By the way, do you think it is any coincidence that you have this attempted coup now in Myanmar, which used to be Burma, in Myanmar? You've got the Chinese flying fighter jets and bombers into Taiwan's airspace. You've got more saber rattling from Iran. Why do you think that's happening? I'll give you. You get 3 guesses, and the first 2 don't count. Why do you think that's happening? Why? Because when Trump was in office, they all thought he was crazy, which is good. Thinking a world leader is a little nuts. He's a little stunned, you know, that's always good. Reagan always thought that. You read back, Ronald Reagan used to laugh when his diplomatic corps used to come and say, Mr. President, the Russians think you're a little, they think you're going senile. And Reagan used to say, good, let them think that. Tell them, he told somebody once, I read in a book, he told one of his domestic policy people, the next time you see your Russian contact, they said, yes, sir. He said, tell them you think I'm a little crazy, too. Tell them you're worried about me. That'll keep them tap dancing, huh? Little soft shoe there at the UN, huh? Oh, man. Well, it's good to know they've woken up about China. That's good to know, boys. They get right there.
In terms of... what you see in terms of the cases, I think the good news is the positivity rate continues to trend down. I think for the first time in several months now, or almost several months, the positivity rate 7-day average is less than 4%. That's remarkable. Hospitalizations trends down. I think 912 is sort of nine straight days of declining hospitalizations. As you remember, that was a pretty important metric as we figured out how we can open things up or otherwise. Fatalities are beginning to trend down a little bit, and that's we got a long way to go there. Look, across the country, you'll see that you know, infections and hospitalizations across the country are down about 14%. So we're trending a little better there. Their fatalities are still trending up a little bit, but not for long. Let's get to vaccines. A couple of things on vaccines. Connecticut remains number three nationally, although Josh is a little cranky because given the snowstorm, we're not going to be able to vaccinate people today. So that could put us back a little bit, but not to worry. I had said I thought the next shipment of vaccines is going to come this afternoon. It's going to come tomorrow morning, but everything is still on track. And as you can see, we'll make up for that lost day, and everybody will be caught up by Sunday. A really good news that 45% of the folks 75 and above, those that are most likely to suffer complications, have been vaccinated, at least with their first vaccination to date. That's enormous good news. I'll show you in a second, though, the incredible disparity between towns, who's getting vaccinated and otherwise. And let me just give you a pause on J&J and the additional supply coming out, because there's been a lot of discussion about this over the last few days, if you watch the news shows and the such. Good news is, look, we've administered now 425,000 doses. We did 111,000 doses, so about a quarter, you know, in the last week alone. We are ramping up. 86,000 have gotten their second dose as part of that package. But you've heard a lot about, hey, the different vaccines, you know, I'm a Moderna man. No, I like Pfizer. They are only 3 weeks. J&J, I don't know, only 72% effective. That was all the discussion you had. I think it's worth remembering that all of these vaccines are incredibly effective at keeping you from severe complications, incredibly effective at keeping you out of the hospital, and virtually 100% effective at preventing fatalities. So if you get a chance to get a vaccine, you take that opportunity. I know you've heard you know, a little bit about the different varieties out there, the variants, and you know, we've gone from 8 to 16 of the variants. We used to call it the variant that originated in the United Kingdom, the UK, but Marietta has sort of informed me, let's call it the B117. Let's not tie it to any particular country where perhaps it was at one point. And okay, so some of the vaccines are more effective against the traditional COVID than say one or two of these variants. But the good news is that the mRNA, the nature of the genetic instructions that were that they provide, this is different than a traditional vaccine where they just inject you with a little bit of the virus and you build up antibodies. Here, the mRNA vaccines are very adaptable. What they do is provide a genetic instructions, which in effect protect your body from the virus. So we've been spending a fair amount of time talking to the pharma companies, and they respond with a high degree of confidence that even though there are different varieties coming out of UK and South Africa and Brazil, and some are more effective than others, they're also gonna be very effective. We will be effective, our pharmaceutical company is effective in upgrading these vaccines, coming up with booster shots that make them even more effective against these variants if they catch up. Right now, 99% of ours are in the traditional mode here in Connecticut, but that's not true everywhere else around the country. This little chart is interesting. You can get that on our COVID website. It's an interactive chart. And what it does is show you by your town the percent of folks, mainly those 75 and above, who have been vaccinated, at least with their first vaccination. And you can just hover over the screen, go to your town and see how well you're doing. And this is not a competition, but it is worth noting that Oxford and Wilton and Roxbury and Hebron and Essex and Marlborough are our champs so far. They have over 80% of their folks 75 and above, over 80% have had at least their first vaccination. And that's important. A little push to some of the folks that we got to do better. We're going to work with you to help you do better. These are some of the towns that have less than 25%. So if the winners are at over 80%, New Britain, Winchester, Thomaston, Bridgeport, all at less than 25%. So we're going to help catch up there, make sure this incredibly vulnerable population gets their dose. And I'd like to think within 10 days, 2 weeks, we're going to be making available the vaccines to the 65 and above group as well. One reason we've been able to keep up with the vaccines and make sure that they were not sitting on a shelf, but actually were a shot in the arm, is because of the incredible number of volunteers that have stepped up. They've gone to ct.gov, Step Up Connecticut. 4,000 Medical Reserve Corps volunteers have stepped up, and it makes an enormous difference. Some of them are retired nurses coming in, helping with the vaccination. Some of them are smart people, are pretty good with an iPad, help us administer this and track it going forward. But it could not be more important what you do is help us stay ahead of these variants and get people vaccinated in a real way. Look, we call the vaccinations a shot in the arm here in the United States. In Britain, they call it the jab, and number of people who are getting the jab. And so we like to think that jabs and jobs go hand in hand, and that's how we're going to beat this COVID and get our economy back on its own 2 feet. In terms of slowly getting back to a new normal, our better numbers are allowing us to slightly relax some of the restrictions. I alluded to this last week. One, our houses of worship have been extraordinary, considered somewhat risky, generally oriented towards an older demographic. Well, that older demographic is getting vaccinated. Our overall community spread is down. So we're going to keep the 50% capacity rule, which is true of most of our other retail establishments, restaurants as well, but there's no cap. And I think that makes a difference. That was the source of some lawsuits out there in other states. So I'd like to think we're making a real difference there. Mass and distancing required, that's true. Let me just give you a heads up. What I've heard from other governors say, don't tell people, just sit 6 feet apart. When you go to that house of worship, show where people should be sitting, not where not to sit. Show where they should be sitting. And that makes, following the protocols a lot easier to do. And again, in the business curfews, primarily restaurants, but bowling alleys and some other facilities, we had a 10 o'clock curfew. Now we're going to extend that to 11 over the next couple of days. That will be implemented. Our rates are down, allows us to do it. I think our restaurants in particular have really operated professionally, doing everything they could to keep you safe. Our friends in New York have relaxed to a 10 o'clock curfew. We're at 11 o'clock. They're at a 25% or 50% occupancy. We're at 50%. And our friends to the north, Massachusetts and Rhode Island, they've lifted the curfew, but they're at 25%. So we're all more or less on the same plate. And I think what a difference that's going to make. And it gets us back, as long as you're cautious, to a new normal. Finally, I think you've sort of seen this slide before, but look, we got the variants, we got the vaccines, we got more vaccines, things are changing. What do I do? I got the highly infectious, the B117 coming. Do what you've been doing. Watch your distance, keep the 6 feet, wear your mask, wear your mask, wear your mask, and wash your hands whenever you get the opportunity. You know that, Marietta Vasquez, I'd like to just introduce you, if you could talk for a couple of minutes about the amazing work you've done in explaining the importance of vaccinations to different populations around this state and the different vaccines themselves.
Yes, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for all you do. I'm Maria Damascus. I'm originally from Puerto Rico, but I've been living in Connecticut for close to 27 years. I'm a pediatric infectious disease specialist, and vaccines are my area of expertise in terms of research, policy, and advocacy. And I know that it's been a long time that COVID fatigue sets in, but we have some new information to share on the topics that the governor was talking about, and the topic of this new variant, what this means for us, how worried should we be? And then in terms of vaccination and then sort of how we put this all together and what to gather from this. In terms of the variants, this is expected. Viruses mutate. And we've all been cognizant or aware of the fact that the longer a virus is circulating in a community, something about it is going to change. And this is the virus's way of remaining fit to circulate in the community, because they're quite savvy, right? You throw a medication or a type of treatment and the virus is going to try to figure out how to survive from circulating in the community. And thus far, there have been three variants that have been identified. They've been identified in different countries, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's where they were born, so to speak, or developed. We really haven't been looking for these variants on every single case of COVID. The information is emerging, but what we know so far is that of these three variants, one, the B.1.1.7 that was identified in the United Kingdom, there's a second one that was identified in South Africa called the B.1.351, and the third one that was identified in Japan in travelers who were coming from Brazil, and that one's called the P1, that what we know so far is that all of them seem to be targeted by the vaccines that we have currently in the market, which is obviously very good news. But they each have sort of their differences. You know, we can go into it during the questions, but it's important for us to know that they're there. Even more important for the second topic, which is vaccination. What are we going to do about these? First of all, feel quite confident that not a specific group of researchers, we're talking about the entire scientific community in the entire globe. This is the focus of pretty much everybody who is able to study and be able to do research on this. And more information is going to come. As the governor mentioned, our vaccines are really our best strategy, hand in hand with all of the protective measures that we have. And the more individuals who get vaccinated, the less virus that's going to circulate in the community, and the fewer opportunities that if these mutations or variants continue to occur, they will have an impact on the health of people in Connecticut and in the United States and around the world. The vaccines, again, as the governor mentioned, both of the vaccines that we currently have in the market work well. They're vaccines that we call they're very immunogenic, and what that means is a vaccine works by the person receiving the vaccine, whatever you get in your body tricks your immune system into thinking you're infected. And then your body starts developing protection. Why? So that then when you're faced with the real deal, COVID in this case, then you're protected against infection, against hospitalization, and more importantly, against death. And these vaccines are very, very good at tricking us into developing protection, not only in young individuals, but also in the elderly. The majority of the vaccines that we have in the market right now tend to be less effective as we age because our immune systems are not as robust. But the COVID vaccines in the market right now are very, very immunogenic. And these are not the only two vaccines. There are many other vaccines, again, as the governor mentioned, that are coming down. So I think to sum it up, there are great strategies to in our armamentarium right now. I know we're tired of the mask and the hand washing and the social distancing, but we need to continue to do that. And very important, if you have the opportunity, when it is your time to get that vaccine, if you choose so, which I hope you do for yourself, for your family members, and for our communities, get vaccinated.
Thank you, Dr. Vasquez. Josh and Paul are here. Any questions?
All right, once again, we'll ask our reporters to be judicious with their follow-ups to make sure we get through as many questions as we can. We'll start with NBC Connecticut.
Good afternoon, Governor. Any idea how many vaccination appointments were canceled today because of the storm?
You know that, Josh?
Yeah, we don't have a precise number. We think it's a little over 10,000. We have had some of our providers continue through the storm, Hartford Healthcare, Stanford Hospital, others have forged ahead, but we do know there's been a significant disruption today. People who had appointments canceled should hear from that provider to help them reschedule. We've asked all providers to extend their hours through the rest of this week, through the weekend. We want to get everybody who had an appointment canceled today caught up before the end of the week.
Speaking of canceled appointments, I don't believe this was weather related. Over the weekend, we heard a couple of hospitals canceling them just because they didn't have enough vaccine. I know when we've asked in the past about this happening in other states, you indicated that we were only booking appointments for the amount of vaccine we had so that we wouldn't run into that issue. So what happened?
Yeah, we did have a couple of providers who booked more appointments than they had commitment for vaccine from the Department of Public Health. So that shouldn't happen going forward. There's some communication issues there that I think have been ironed out, and hopefully we won't see that happen again.
Okay, and also you had said recently we have a deal with surrounding states to vaccinate people who work in one state but live in another. Can you tell me how many non-Connecticut residents have received vaccinations here in Connecticut? Are they taking up spots that are supposed to be for residents?
Don't have that exact number. We can get that. But keep in mind, we'll have Connecticut residents who are being vaccinated in New York and Massachusetts and Rhode Island as well. So we'll keep an eye on it. But at this point, we don't think there's anything out of balance there.
It's reciprocal.
Correct.
Okay. And then lastly, any consideration for allowing people 65 and older who live in a household with someone that's over 75 be allowed to get the vaccine sooner?
Sooner is, 10 days. So that's going to be pretty soon.
Okay, thank you.
News 8.
Good afternoon, everyone. And Governor, you mentioned how the trends, certain important numbers are trending in the right direction, and really talked about the fact that volunteers have been a big part of this. Any idea comparing what's happened in Connecticut with those volunteers as compared to other states with people volunteering?
I can't speak to that. I can't speak to the fact that the volunteerism has been extraordinary in Connecticut. You know about the young people who are helping out in the classroom. You know about all the folks that were there for track and trace. You know about, here's one that sort of struck me. We had to reschedule a lot of appointments in New Haven for reasons you can well understand. The Board of Alders said, let us call up, we'll call our constituents over the age of 75 and tell them we can reschedule it as another date. So I've been pretty impressed with the people standing up and making a difference.
The change now to 11 o'clock curfew as opposed to 10 o'clock. Do you see, I know that's just happening along with the House of Worship within the last couple of days. Is there something on your mind that would be the next step, the next change, if the numbers continue trending in the right direction, something else that you would either enhance or open that has been previously closed?
Let's see how this settles out for 2 or 3 weeks, maybe at some point it's a little safer to put people in the stands and let a few folks watch some of the games.
And lastly, for Dr. Vasquez, there was a time, maybe a few months back, where there was a lot of concern with a lot of the healthcare workers because hospitalizations were piling up. Now those are heading in the right direction too. So are you in agreement with relaxing some of the restrictions as the governor has recently done?
I think it's a good idea to have the changes be harmonized with how full or available we have hospital beds in our state. So I would say, to the degree that those two go hand in hand, that we're not relaxing when we need to turn cafeterias into hospitals, yes, I'm in agreement.
To kick off the final hour of the show today, welcoming back a gentleman we'd like to have on from time to time to talk all things Bridgeport, and he well knows, whether you're writing for a blog, covering for television, writing for a newspaper, or doing talk radio, there is never a lack of material to talk about if you are covering the greater Bridgeport area. Brian Lockhart joins us, Connecticut Post, Hearst, Connecticut Media. You see his stuff all day, pretty much almost every day in the Hearst publications. Brian, Paul here. Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year to you, too. Thanks for having me back, Paul.
Never a dull moment, Brian, in this area. Man, where do we start?
It's the most interesting beat in the state. I tell everybody that. It's a really interesting city to cover.
I was thinking the other day, just after we chatted remotely, that you were going to come on. I said, geez, look, I love New Haven, born and raised there. Yeah, New Haven's got Hartford, but man, it never ends here. Let's start with, and I don't know whether the meeting is still on tonight, Brian, or what, but this push now to have Bridgeport maybe outlaw flavored tobacco products, that was due to be taken up either tonight or whenever the city council was going to meet, correct?
Yeah, they were going to, the city council was going to put it forward tonight. That meeting was actually just canceled,
okay,
maybe about half an hour or so ago. But there's still a lot of work to do on it. The only thing they were going to do tonight is introduce it and then essentially vote it out of the council and send it to the appropriate committee for them to have the committee level debates and the public hearing.
Some of the supporters of this, Brian, are selling it as, you know, part two of a two-part equation, moving back to 2 years ago now, almost, when Bridgeport was able to raise the age to buy products from 18 to 21. The state followed up after that, and now they look at this as part two. Do you think this one, which I think, Brian, is a little more contentious, you think this has any legs or not?
That's a really good question. I think the challenge here is if Bridgeport. I know that some of the larger cities are trying to team up on this. It was mentioned to me last week, I think Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven either all have something in the works, or there's discussion behind the scenes to introduce a similar proposal in those cities. And the idea here, I think, is to act locally, but also try and put some pressure on state lawmakers, because there are proposals pending currently in the legislative session. It makes it difficult when you do this stuff locally, because, you know, if you're trying to get folks not to purchase these particular items and not to smoke or not to use these particular items, but you're only doing it within your boundaries, they can hop over to the next municipality and buy it there. And obviously that's one of the arguments, that's an economic argument here as well, because the stores, the mom and pop shops, the smoke shops aren't going to like this, number one, but they're really not going to like it if it impacts them in Bridgeport, but it's not a level playing field, and other smoke shops in other cities and towns can still sell these products. So I do think it's going to be contentious. One of my jobs this week is I do have to reach out to some smoke shop owners and talk to them a little bit about this, because changing the age is one thing, but completely taking a particular product off the shelves so they can't sell it at all, that's another.
And maybe, Brian, not even the smoke shop owners, but I'm thinking even the bodegas or the convenience stores who sell this stuff, who may, yeah, okay, they may sell something flavored by Juul or some flavored blunts or whatever, thin cigars. But then again, that same person in there may be buying drinks. They may be buying lottery tickets. They may be buying, you know, a prepared sandwich. It's not as easy, I think, as you point out, as people think.
Yeah, I agree with you. Although, the flip side is, this is a trend. I mean, if you recall, President Trump at one time was pressured to try and legislate something on the federal level. And Governor Lamont had actually been interested in this particular topic back in 2019. It just really never went anywhere during the 2020 legislative session because that was cut short because of the pandemic.
Something else that's going to come up in the session, Brian, is, and again, I'm getting so many calls about it. You see the same reports I do. You folks have done really good work at it at Hearst, is again the push to legalize recreational marijuana. You've spoken to the people in the Bridgeport area, and I have too, Reverend McCluster above them, who, you know, many of them, Brian, are not really all together with this as others are. What are you seeing or hearing? Because it seems like the General Assembly, Brian, has to really still sell the three major cities, Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven, on this.
Right. And Bridgeport has been, to your point, Bridgeport has been divided on this. I think there are people who believe that this would be a good step economically. It would be a good step in terms of the criminal justice system. However, I do, you know, it is divided. There are a lot of pastors and prominent religious leaders that are against this. And that is going to really make a big difference because the cities, you know, you're going to have important votes coming from all the cities in the legislature. And you need the delegations from Hartford and New Haven and Bridgeport on board with controversial issues like this if they have a chance of getting passed up in Hartford.
The mayor and a housing official in the city, Brian, just one of these things that you kind of shake your head at, being at least implicated. Well, obviously, there's no implication for the housing director there, but rumblings about who was at that party in Trumbull, who wasn't there, who was there, people dropping dimes on people, you know, all over the place. You know, who knows what's true? But again, another kind of these side issues that people really look at and a lot of people shake their heads about.
Yeah, so you're talking about Danny Pizarro,
yeah,
who who works in the housing code office, is a friend of Mayor Ganim's, and had a big birthday party, big illegal birthday party because of the pandemic, violated COVID rules, having too many people there in Trumbull about 2 weeks ago. And that is being looked at currently by the state's attorney's office for the Fairfield County area. Mm. And I understand that they're looking at video footage, trying to see who was there. I think that's going to be a challenge. On the one hand, I do think that state officials and local health officials would like to do a little bit more here. Right now, Mr. Pizarro faces a $500 fine. That's the maximum fine he could receive for this. And it is interesting because if he had been running a restaurant or if he had been running some sort of a nightclub, yeah, and had gotten in this same trouble, he could be under Governor Lamont's executive orders facing a $10,000 fine. But the fine for residential violations was never raised, so it stands at $500. And there are some folks who would like to make more of an example of Mr. Pizarro. How they're going to do it, I don't know. I think it's going to be very difficult. They could try and charge the guests that he had, $250 each. But it's going to be hard. If all you're going on is surveillance and then you got to spend a lot of time tracking these folks down and proving that they were there and then getting them to pay the fines, it's going to be tough.
That'd be a pretty expensive birthday party too, if you had to attend. Hey, great party. It cost me $250. And Brian, one last thing. Interesting story I saw the other day. The city and maybe the council looking at, from a legal point of view, what is regulated constitutional protest out of in front of someone's, you know, home? And where's that line between protest and harassment? And that's, again, another one of these fascinating issues that has its roots here in some protests that went on in the city.
Yes. So last November, some police reform protesters were out in front of Council President Heidi Nieves' house, and they were frustrated because the council had been talking for a good portion of last year about trying to reform policing in the city. And that has been a very slow process. There's an effort underway, but it's just a very slow one, and these folks are frustrated by it. So they protested in front of her house. She and some other council members were upset because they felt that these protesters had gone a bit too far. They had hung a banner or a sign in front of her front gate. Her husband was trying to get out to go to work, and I didn't cover it. A colleague of mine was there, but we had reported that he was verbally harassed by some of the protesters. So they're trying to find a way to limit these things. And again, that's going to be a big challenge, because you run into freedom of speech and you run into freedom to protest. And just even looking at this, there was a vote last week by a city council committee to ask a city attorney to look at the legalities of trying to place more restrictions on these types of protests. And just the vote to ask the attorney to look at it, not to pass anything, just to ask an attorney to look at it. Just that was a lengthy debate and kind of a divisive debate. So it's not going to be easy. And the Connecticut version of the Civil Liberties Union had already come out, giving me a statement saying that, you know, they were going to be watching this very carefully. There are already a lot of regulations on the books in Bridgeport. For example, there's a noise ordinance. So if someone was protesting outside of your house and you felt it was too loud, you felt it was disturbing your neighbors, you could call the city and you could call the police. So the argument is there are already these things on the books. There's already enough on the books to sort of regulate these types of demonstrations. So I do think that wherever that goes, it is going to be a controversial topic, definitely, and not something that's easy to pass.
And there is never a dull moment in the Park City. Brian Lockhart, Hearst Connecticut Media, Connecticut Post, other papers. You read this stuff all the time. Brian, good to chat with you. Keep you updated. If you have a hot story coming, don't hesitate to reach out. Brian, thanks. Be good.
Thank you, Paul. Take care of yourself.
Appreciate it. Brian Lockhart, Connecticut Post, Hearst Connecticut Media.